used to be that the majority of Americans trusted in higher education in the United States. Now about 1 in 3 Americans do, and that has real reasons.
Students were ordered to dismantle an encampment.
They have often punished students for saying unpopular things, especially if they violated various woke totems. Left identitarianism on one side and the right-wing populism of people like Trump on the other side might seem like they're in competition with each other, but they actually help each other. They actually politically strengthen each other.
I think your fake eyelashes are messing up.
No, ain't nothing.
Hold on.
What we're going to get is just another swing of a pendulum.
Hello, I'm Fraser Myers, Deputy Editor of Spikes. Thrilled to be joined by Yasha Monk, Editor of Persuasion and the author of The Identity Trap. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Yasha, there's a lot of talk about a vibe shift, particularly in the wake of Trump's re-election. You're someone that says maybe this has been exaggerated. Hold your horses. Woke isn't dead yet. Why do you make that case?
So I think there is a real vibe shift to some extent. Very quickly, this set of left identitarian ideas became dominant in mainstream American institutions. And there was a number of years where, but if you couldn't criticize any of those ideas,
yeah,
and some of the most absurd ideas were still held in reverence. Mm. And I think those two things have changed a little bit. The most extreme ends of these ideas have been walked back a little bit. You don't see many activists saying, let's defund the police anymore.
Mm.
You have slightly fewer attempts to really just determine what basic services a citizen should be eligible to on the basis of a race. And the space for criticizing these ideas has opened up a little bit. Mm. You know, people in a cafe who have the kind of conversations that they might do, the readers of Spiked magazine, don't lower the voice by quite as many decibels as they did in the past. So there's some real change.
Yeah.
But I think the extent of it has been slightly exaggerated.
Mm.
And in particular, the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
Many people in left-leaning milieus like the arts, some academics at big institutions, the only way they have of seeing the world is through this identitarian lens. And so they don't really have anything to substitute it with.
Yeah.
So even as the Democratic Party is saying, oh, all right, you know, perhaps according to a few voices in the party, not the majority, we should rethink whether or not we allow, athletes who've gone through male puberty to participate in female sporting competitions if they're trans. The basic worldview that led them to very unpopular positions remains the same. And on the next issue, they're still going to go back to that.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask you about. The resistance to Trump, I mean, it's been muted a bit more than, certainly more than last time. But when it comes and inevitably will come, you think it will take a woke form mostly?
That is my concern, right? And look at the university. The median professor in America is not a left identitarian. They're kind of center-left liberal.
Yeah.
Right. For the last few years, it was possible to say, perhaps our university shouldn't take stances on big controversial political issues. Perhaps the university should limit itself to institutional neutrality so that it only speaks out about things that directly affect the university, right? Perhaps we shouldn't have deeply ideological diversity statements that are mandatory for faculty applicants, in which basically you have to sound like a critical race theorist in order to even be considered for a job in chemistry, right? Perhaps those were mistakes. And as long as Biden was in power, as long as the culture war felt a little bit muted in the United States, you know, reformers in the center or others who are critical of these ideas could make that case. And the center-left professors would say, oh, you know, perhaps they have a point. We find that to be a little bit illiberal as well. We're a little bit concerned about that too. Now that Trump is in office and is dominating the news every day and is attacking the universities, it's very easy for the left identitarians to say any change, any reform is just a surrender to Trump. Right. And that's the last thing we want to do.
Yeah.
And that's a very powerful argument. Understandably, I mean, I feel the pull of that argument for this sort of center-left liberal professors. And so, I worry that in this kind of way, institutions are going to fall right back into that trap. And the fundamental thing to bear in mind here is that, that quote unquote wokeness on the left, that left, identitarianism on one side and the right wing populism of people like Trump on the other side might seem like they're in competition with each other, but they actually help each other. They actually politically, strengthen each other. And so I worry that what we need is to get out of this pendulum, and what we're going to get is just another swing of a pendulum.
And do you see a miniature resurgence of cancel culture at all? Have there been, because that doesn't seem to have gone away. There, no matter how many executive orders Trump passes, you can't, that couldn't defeat cancel culture, for instance, being a sort of, something that happens at a lower level of things.
No, it must be said that the administration is engaging in some cancellations of its own, right? I mean, students in the United States don't have the same constitutional rights as citizens, so it's a slightly special case. But nevertheless, I find it very discomforting when students who express views about the Palestine conflict, for example, which I don't necessarily agree, in a student newspaper, you know, perfectly anodyne sort of criticisms of Israeli policy or whatever, you know, find their student visa revoked the next day. And, you know, there's people who won't show identification, arresting women, putting them in detention facilities and so on. I mean, that's a pretty heavy-handed use of executive power in order to, you know, impose a particular viewpoint or discourage the expression of a disfavored viewpoint. But at the same time, yes, you also continue to see stories of cancellations. Those, and the editor of a Columbia Journalism Review, for example, who is a very experienced journalism. He's been my editor at various points, so I know him well, who was accused of, you know, being overly agitated when he was trying to get a scoop up on the website.
Right.
And his colleague somehow felt threatened or mistreated by that. Mm-hmm. And he was unceremoniously fired by the dean of the Columbia Journalism School. You know, there's these kind of examples of some of those moral panics coming back. And that's certainly concerning. We're not at the level they were in 2020.
Yeah.
You know, as the political situation becomes more and more tense over the next years, you could imagine, you know, that resurging in the same way.
And it's clear you've outlined some of the ways which the Trump administration is clearly harming, liberty, harming free speech. Are there any things that it's doing that you see as actually helping? Are there anything you would credit it with?
I wish that I had more to say on that, and I don't find that they've been very useful. You know, let's go to universities, which I know well, you know, as someone who teaches at the university. The universities have made big mistakes in the last years.
Yeah.
And they've squandered a lot of public trust. It used to be that a clear majority of Americans trusted in higher education in the United States. Now about one in three Americans do. And that has real reasons. Universities are incredibly expensive. They spend enormous amounts of money on relatively frivolous things like state-of-the-art gym equipment and an army of administrators who look after the every whim of students. Yeah. You know, and a lot of those administrators have really imposed ideological beliefs in the way that they run orientation programs with racially segregated affinity groups. It's now quite common for American universities to offer racially segregated housing, racially segregated graduation ceremonies. Mm-hmm. There's lots of things to complain about. The Trump administration could have said, we are going to use the carrot and the stick of federal funding in order to counteract genuine forms of ideological coercion on campus.
Yeah.
But instead, what we've decided is, A, we're going to impose our own views on campus, which is a different thing. And B, you know, actually, these universities are never really going to be on our side. We're always going to be quite hostile to our kind of political space, the MAGA space. So what we're going to do is just to weaken them as much as possible. We're just going to beat up on them in every way possible. And that is not productive. And it's going to be to the detriment of the United States, because along with a lot of quite silly research, these universities too also produce some very important research, which helps to explain what Silicon Valley is in the United States and why America is leading on artificial intelligence and many other technologies of the future.
And what is your take on the student protests that have been going on since 7th of October? It's clearly not purely a humanitarian, you know, concern for the people of Gaza. There's something a bit darker going on there, I think.
Yeah, it's a mix of both. I mean, I think some of the protesters are understandably horrified by the ongoing war in the Middle East and upset about the civilian casualties. I wish they sometimes also expressed horror at the civilian casualties on the Israeli side when Hamas perpetrated that horrible attack. But it's perfectly reasonable and understandable to be are very upset by the many civilian casualties on the Palestinian side in Gaza. And I think there's some students who are generally exercised by that.
Yeah.
There are others who are radicals and extremists, who clearly, do ultimately side with Hamas, which is, you know, extremely violent terrorist organization that, apart from anything else, is holding its own population hostage in an extremely cruel way. You know, the broader thing to say here is that we need very clear and consistent, rules of free speech. And in my mind, those should mean that you can say whatever you want, however offensive that may be.
Yeah.
But there are clear restrictions on the place, manner, and location in which you express those things. Free speech does not entail a right to go and occupy the office of a president of a university or to go disrupt classes or professors you don't like. Universities in the run-up to 2023 have failed to enforce these rules on both sides,
yeah,
which is to say that they have often punished students for saying unpopular things, especially if they violated various woke totems. But they also have not been willing to punish students who did occupy the offices of university presidents or who had camp, you know, tent encampments during Occupy Wall Street, for example. Right.
Yeah.
And so today students on both sides of this issue feel like they're being singled out. Mm. Jewish students say, you know, at Columbia, there was a student who went on a stupid drunken rant about how great white people are and how much they've achieved. And he was banned from parts of campus. But now you allow the students to shout stuff that is really threatening to Jewish students and you're not going to do anything. Why are we different? And I understand that. I also understand the pro-Palestinian students who say for the last 50 years, you never called for police, no matter how people vandalize the university.
Yeah.
And now suddenly you are, right?
Mm.
The way out of that, again, is to say you can say whatever you want, but you're not allowed to have tent encampments. You're not allowed to occupy the office of a president. And if you repeatedly violate those rules, then you're going to have strict punishments. But it's hard for universities to enforce those rules in a consistent way since they have no leg to stand on, since they didn't do that in the past.
Yeah. And what do you make of the term the woke right? Is that a useful term? And is it a phenomenon that we should be worried about?
I think it's a politically generative term. It's pointing out to some real parallels between the woke left and the woke right. It is calling attention to the fact both that a lot of those cancel instincts are now quite strong on the extremely online right, you know, in the same way in which, you know, if ever on the left you said, well, this person said something that goes a little bit too far, might be a little bit politically concerning, you know, we shouldn't tolerate that, you were then yourself accused of being racist or of being intolerant or of trying to silence the marginalized or something like that.
Yeah.
Now in the cards of your online right, if you say, well, you know, perhaps engaging in outright racism or anti-Semitism is not such a great idea. People say, oh, you're a libtard, right? You're a traitor. You're not really part of our movement. And that, I think, is a genuine problem in those political spaces. And then I think there is a kind of identitarian appeal on both sides,
yeah,
right? You know, the way I think about this is that we have a basic instinct as humans towards forming in-groups and out-groups and often being very generous towards the in-group, but also quite cruel or hostile towards the out-group. And the project of civilization, the point of a decent culture, is to counteract that, at least to some extent, to say we're going to draw a broad tent and we're going to be respectful even of people who we might consider the out-group. And I think both identitarianism on the left and various forms of nationalism, you know, extreme nationalism or racism or other forms of exclusion on the right, are basically attempts to justify that evolutionary instinct. Say, no, it's fine, it's good if you're just in favor of the in-group and don't care about that person over there, right? So I think there's a kind of similarity there. But both of those are shared with many other political movements.
Yeah.
But cancellations also existed in Salem, Massachusetts in, 1619 and in Beijing in 1961.
Yeah.
You know, various forms of giving you an excuse for preferring the in-group are very old. To me, the core of left identitarianism is a particular ideology with a particular history. And that really is what wokeness means for me. The idea of sort of, you know, the woke right slightly underplays that distinctive intellectual history and that distinctive set of ideas. And insofar as it does that, I think it overplays the parallel in a way that isn't very helpful. So look, you know, for the sake of an argument on Twitter, I think the term woke right is pretty helpful, and it did pay attention, you know, it did call attention to some real pathologies on the right.
Mm.
But as a term of intellectual analysis, I find that it overstates the structural similarity between these sets of views.
Yasha, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.